Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 71, being recorded on the 1st of April, 2015, with special guest Adam Abdelhamid. I'm Sujit DeMello, and on Skype, on Link with me today, we're doing this over Link. On Link with me, we have Evan Basilek and our special guest Adam. And before we get to Adam and introducing himself, just want to say, Evan, good to have you back on the show. I know you were kind of tied up last week.
Yeah, I would much rather be here than stuck on another multi-day grid, that's for sure.
Anything interesting you can share, or was it something that
actually,
listeners might?
Yeah, it was. This was actually with an on-premises VPN device, and we'll go probably a little bit techie here, but if you do a static VPN, so IPv1. You have to explicitly tell both Azure and the on-premises device the subnets that are going to communicate. And what actually had happened is the customer had been changing their subnets over time and not keeping the two sides in sync. So if a packet came in initiating the tunnel from one of those subnets that was not in the list, if the remote side didn't have it, the tunnel would drop. And so it basically was every so often their tunnel would drop and they couldn't figure out why. It got actually really bad because we're not exactly sure why this happened, but at one point, because this was going on so much, both the Azure side of the VPN and the on-premises VPN device both completely fell over to the point where we had to restart both of them, and then we were back to just intermittent drops.
Wow.
But yeah, definitely, if you're doing static tunnels, you got to manage your IPs. That's actually why we really recommend dynamic tunnels, because then you don't have to specifically, you don't have to specify your IPs up front.
Right. Actually, I always wondered, when it comes to that level of issues with the network, are there any logs that we have access to as a customer to help us track those things?
So the on-premises device has IPsec logging that they can turn on. Azure has a REST API, and I think there's PowerShell as well today, for getting some sanitized IPsec logs back from the VPN gateway. I mean, internally we have access to kind of a more detailed level of logging, but externally we do expose some, and so I do recommend people, you know, if they have a tunnel problem, to use the APIs and get that back. I'll put in the show notes, we've got a diagnostics package that my team wrote that kind of makes it easier for you to turn these on, because it's using the REST APIs is non-trivial in Azure if you're not used to it. Doing it via PowerShell. So I'll put those in the notes. So yeah, definitely people should leverage that if they're having trouble getting their tunnel up.
Excellent. And I think our listeners may have noticed Kale's not with us tonight. I don't know, maybe he's tied up with a customer. We haven't been able to get a hold of him, but he might just jump in sometime during the show. So hopefully we'll see if he gets on. But, you know, last week, Evan, you weren't there. We spoke with Mark Grimes, who's an MCT, he's a trainer, and an MCS app dev guy as well. And we spoke to him about the Azure certifications. And it just so happens that, you know, based on some of his feedback that he gave last week, and also Kale mentoring me a little bit, I was able to do my Azure certification for the 7534 exam yesterday. The solution architect one, and I've got to say, it was harder than I expected. You know, it's a tough exam. They really ask you some wide variety of questions over there, which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, don't give me too many hints. I'm sitting for it on the 8th.
You won't have a problem because, you know, a lot of the stuff was PowerShell and all, which I don't do on a day-to-day basis. So, yeah, I was a little stumped with some of those. But so you should be fine. That's something that you do in your sleep. I know that. So,
well, Yeah, there's always another command to learn, though, right? That's always the challenge. So, well,
Exactly.
no, congratulations. I know you were kind of stressing out about that a
Yeah,
little
I
bit.
was a little stressed out, but now that we've got that done. And well, Adam, sorry. Please, Adam, can you introduce yourself for our listeners, please?
Sure, I'm Adam Abdelhamid. I'm a program manager on the Azure Portal team. I've been working on Azure and on the Portal team for 3 or 4 years now. Yeah, excited to be with you guys today.
And
Glad to have you.
yeah, definitely. This is a topic we've been meaning to discuss for a long time on the show, and we just haven't found the right person to discuss it. So I'm glad we got you. So I got to ask you this question now. I think everyone knows the code name that we use for the new portal. Is that Ibiza? Is that how you say it? Or
Depending on what language you're speaking, it's
okay,
Ibiza. Ibiza. We
Ibiza.
usually say Ibiza, yeah.
Okay.
I told those guys, funny story, I told those guys when they were picking the code name, you're picking something that everyone's going to pronounce differently, so. But they didn't
We
listen to me.
already have Azure though, right? It's Azure, it's Azure, it's
True, true.
we already do that there, so why not make it worse, right?
So my question was actually going to be like, and how did the name come about? Is there any significance to the project, or just some random name?
Now, they want you to pick code names that that won't get you into trouble. So I think it's pretty common to pick geographical locations because they can't be trademarked or anything like that. But I think there was actually a vote at one point. I couldn't tell you what the other options were, but the team voted, and Ibiza is what it is.
Excellent. So yeah, so the topic is going to be this new portal that is still being rolled out in a way. It hasn't been fully deployed yet. All the features are not available in the new portal. So a lot of people are using the old portal for things and using the new portal for something else. And as a matter of fact, we often ask our guests on the show whether they like prefer the new portal or the old portal, just to see what people feel. And we've gotten mixed kind of responses so far. Some people say they prefer the old one only because the way things are lined up, and on the left-hand side you get a better view of all your services. But some people like the blade thing. But I'm probably getting too far ahead of myself here. Let me ask you, why did we feel we needed to come up with a new portal design? What was the kind of thinking with the team there?
Well, there were a few things. So if you're familiar with the current portal, at first glance, and a lot of people like it, and like I said, I've been on the portal team for a while, so I worked on that portal as well. But there were a few areas where it just wasn't going to work long term going forward. The biggest issue was scale. So if you notice, it's the old portal is very much focused on letting you get to your resources quickly. So you have that left nav that kind of lists all the services, and on most screen resolutions, not every service even fits on the view, and not everyone even realizes right away that you can scroll that left nav and see more
Go
services.
down, yeah.
So I mean, that was kind of one area. The other area, once you select a resource, you typically get a view that has tabs that let you navigate deeper into the resource and do something like configuration or monitoring. And that was another sort of stress point where things were getting too big, because as we go forward, we see that services don't want to just expose basic management capabilities like, oh, create this thing, start and stop, delete. They want to do much richer workspace type of management. And we felt that old paradigm wasn't gonna last moving forward as some of these richer experiences come in. I mean, you can imagine something like SQL, where what happens when we want to bring in a full SQL Management Studio-like experience where we want to run queries and save them and see the results, or if we wanted to do things like code editing in the Visual Studio Online space, we really didn't have the patterns in place. So that was one reason why we wanted to get a more scalable design. So the new portal is takes a big bet on customization and the ability to make it yours. So if there's things that you deal with every day, you can pin those to your start board. If you've got lots and lots of resources, you should be able to make a view that sort of makes sense for you there. So it's and there's quite a few areas where we think it just scales better. The other reason, which wasn't really a visual design thing, but more of an underlying architecture, we wanted to build a platform where third parties could even contribute UI. And by going with this sort of tile metaphor, where you're having tiles on the screen provided by multiple companies in some cases, we wanted to make sure that they did a good job of kind of playing nice with each other. And if one of them did something bad, it wouldn't affect the other experience. We also wanted to make sure that one partner couldn't sort of sniff the data from the other. So if you've got a if we've got two database companies in the marketplace, they can't see how many of the other guy's databases that any particular customer has. So the new portal is very secure in that sense, in that the way that the various extensions talk to each other is brokered much more heavily by the platform. So really, scale, to just sum up the answer there, scale of the interface, security, extensibility for third parties, and also the ability to really customize it, where the old portal has a very fixed layout, a fixed navigation system.
Right.
So I don't know, hopefully that answers your question.
That was very good. Yeah, I didn't know that. I mean, that whole thing with the third-party add-ins is a brilliant idea. I got to say that.
Yeah, we actually have a few third parties that have contributed some UI. So there's New Relic has an extension in the portal. So when you create a website, you can hook it up to New Relic and actually manage it within the portal. You'll see more of that over time.
So is it safe to assume that the kind of the isolation and the plugin type model that we built for third parties is also being leveraged internally? Because I know historically the problem. So I've been around Azure for a long time. I remember the old Silverlight portal and even some of the stuff we had before that. The problem has always been that it was this monolithic kind of thing that we deployed, and it has been. I know the Aux portal, or kind of the HTML portal that we have today, or the old portal, old new portal. I don't. It's hard to keep up with what's old and what's new. But in the portal that we're moving from, let's put it that way, there were still some challenges as far as how we could kind of light up individual pieces and upgrade individual pieces without this monolithic piece. Is the kind of the plugin model you guys talked about, is that solving that?
It does. I the reason I didn't mention that is, our external customers may not notice that or may not care. But yeah, that's sort of an internal optimization that we have. With the new portal, all extensions are able to kind of deploy and update as they wish, and they could be on their own rhythm, they could be in their own code base, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we've definitely solved that problem
So you really have
with the
moved
new
to a
portal.
platform then that anybody, either third parties or components or whoever can kind of manage their own part, right, at
Absolutely,
that point.
yes.
Okay. Now, could I write an extension?
Not
Like
exactly. Yeah, I mean,
for myself, right? Or
you still have to sort of know us
okay.
to get your extension registered with the main Azure portal. Lots of
Okay.
people have asked us to actually open source the framework and be able to, so you could stand up your own portal and put in your own extensions. So that's a pretty popular ask we get, but
Okay.
we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, it just kind of popped in my head thinking about the other stuff. But I mean, there's it sounds like there's certainly the potential at some point
Absolutely.
down the road.
Yep.
Now, without giving away too much of the secret sauce in terms of how the portal, the new portal, is built, it appears to me, just from looking at it and working with it, it's very like JavaScript heavy, and it's a whole thing like one big spa application. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's definitely a single page app. I mean, if you want to get into how it's built, then it's not really secret sauce, because you could easily poke under the covers.
Okay.
We use a lot of standard stuff. We use TypeScript pretty heavily. So TypeScript is the new strongly typed JavaScript language that Microsoft has. So we use that.
Right.
We use a whole bunch of open source libraries. We use Knockout. In fact, the developer who builds Knockout is on our team, so that kind of helps when we need new features.
Nice, very
Yeah.
nice.
Yeah, so absolutely. Lots of JavaScript, lots of client-side stuff. Most of our extensions do have a server-side presence as well. But that's actually not even required. You could in theory build an extension that's completely client-side and uses cores to access the server.
So it's interesting you talk about some of the third-party stuff, because one of the things that it's kind of a hot button for me, but we're much more open to third-party stuff these days than we were in the past.
Yep.
Right. Has it been kind of a different experience for you guys now that you're leveraging some of this third-party stuff for the portal? I mean, has that kind of opened your eyes up to, hey, we can invest in this over here because we're reusing this other thing that we're getting from open source?
Well, I mean, we like to think that we've sort of been open source friendly for a while. I mean, even the current portal, uses plenty of open source things, right? There's lots of jQuery all over the place. We like to think we're sort of the pioneers or one of the pioneers for Microsoft opening up and being more open source friendly.
Okay, cool.
Now, I know, obviously, when you use the old portal and you use the new portal, you realize that there's some things that are only there in the old portal and some things that are only there in the new portal. Can you explain some of the challenges in, moving all this functionality over and why we've had to have this, I don't know how you explain it, this segregated approach for some of the functionality in each of the portals?
Sure, yeah. Well, at first glance, you might think, oh, the new portal is just a new UI sitting on top of the same service management platform, but it's actually not. So the new portal actually talks to a completely different backend than the old portal. You might have heard the term ARM or Azure Resource Manager. That's the name of the new front end for all the APIs in Azure. And it's different from the one that vCurrent, the current portal talks to. And that wasn't just for fun. That was for a lot. We got a lot of good benefits out of that. So the new Azure Resource Manager, in addition to just serving as sort of a common front end for all the REST APIs, provides a lot of really good value out of the box that wasn't present in the old front end. The biggest one is role-based access, or RBAC. You'll hear us use that term a lot. And when your service participates in that new resource manager scheme, your service by design gets role-based access. So if you wanted to give someone access to manage one VM, you could do that in the new portal. You couldn't do that in the old portal. In the old portal, with the old, they called it RDFE, is the name of the old service that backs it. Basically, you're either a service administrator or a co-administrator on a per-subscription basis, and you get access to the entire subscription or none of it as a whole. So that new architecture that the new portal talks to basically solves that problem, from the ground up.
Correct. So this is the owner, contributor, reader, all those levels.
Right. And to circle back to the original question about, why are some things here and not there? Because, it's sort of, not only does it take time to build the UI, but all of those services sort of need to onboard onto that new management platform so they can get that role-based access and some other benefits that the new platform provides as well.
Okay.
Go ahead, Suji.
Just one thing I want to say, but at the same time, a lot of the new services in Azure that are being supported in the new portal, that functionality is not necessarily being backported to the old portal.
Yeah, that's right. Because we want to move forward, right? And
right.
It would take twice as long to build the UI twice, all that kind of stuff. And we know our customers in Azure like getting their updates frequently, so we don't want to do that.
Great. Yes, yeah, Evan, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think frequently is an understatement these days. So that actually kind of was where I was going to go is, I mean, like, so with this, do you kind of have a sense of, kind of what this architecture change does for your ability to ship these changes, right? Because, we're all about the sooner we get something out for our customers, the better. We're all about removing the barriers to doing that. I mean, are you guys able to, with this, the re-architecting of the Ibiza portal, are you guys able to, ship code faster than you used to be able to, or is it just it's easier to ship it, but you're doing kind of the same cycle? Or, I mean, how does that actually manifest for you guys as a development team?
Oh, we absolutely can go faster. I mean, you kind of touched on an internal implementation detail earlier about the current portal and how it's one monolithic deployment. You know, when with when 20 or 30 teams are contributing to the same code base, it sort of forced us back then to give everyone else sort of a fixed schedule to snap to so that we could all ship together. And with that model, we were still able to ship pretty quickly. The current portal ships just about every 3 weeks. But yeah, since the new portal is much more distributed, you know, there's the kind of the main shell deployment that deploys the shell that you know, the thing you see when you log in. And then we talked about how individual teams who own their extensions can update and deploy them as frequently as they want. And with that, we see that happening. So the main shell of the portal, we're actually able to ship every day if we need to.
Do me a favor, in support, please don't do that.
Well, you know, it really comes in handy when we have to do hot fixes and things like
True.
That. But yeah, as a general thing, we don't do it. We don't deploy for fun every day. But yeah, and then the individual extensions are able to deploy as frequently as they'd like as well, and they can hot fix individually. You know, so now when we have a big release, you don't have to kind of orchestrate hot fixes from 20 teams in a single deployment. So we definitely get that benefit here.
Okay. Now, are there any features that were put in the new portal to make it easier to troubleshoot problems with the portal? Like if, you know, if customers encounter issues, are there things in there that will help you guys track those problems down quickly?
Well, you know, we do all sorts of logging. So, you know, on the back end, we've got lots of information. But yeah, if a customer has an issue, there's actually a little trick in both portals that you can do. If you ever have some kind of an issue, mm-hmm. you can push Control-Alt-A, and that will pop up a window that just has some, you know, a big JSON blob in it. And that's designed so if you have a problem, you could easily just send us that. And that's got all sorts of information like, you know, your subscription IDs, which extensions are loaded, what version of the portal and each extension you're looking at, you know, the time that your session started. And we can generally use a bunch of that information to then dig into our logs on the back end and get more detailed information about any errors you encountered. So that would be, yeah, that's again, in both portals, you could do that trick.
I'm actually a little bit embarrassed to say that I was actually just doing that in the old portal today I was telling you earlier, I ran into a bug and was filing it. But I didn't even ever think to check that in the new portal. So now I'm all excited to see, hey, what other information can I get in there that I couldn't get before? And wow, it's a lot more.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Now, what kind of plans do we have for the new portal, Adam, going forward? Are we planning to add some more functionality, or as you said, you know we're allowing other vendors to add their own pieces into the portal? But in terms of the basic functionality of the portal, is there something more that you can share with our listeners?
Sure. So you know, right now the portal is still in preview. So if you log into it, you see a green preview stripe in the top left. So the goal is to sort of take that preview tag off, right? And that means we have some internal goals on performance, on usability, on which features we want to see in the portal, like some kind of core set of features that need to be there before we take that off. So we're working through that. And then the other thing that we do is we want to make sure that some of our top feedback issues are resolved. So there is a really good feedback site for Azure. I don't know the URL off the top of my head, but
you can give it to me later. I'll put it in the show notes.
Sure. So I'll give you that. But there's a site that you can go to. It's off of Azure.com. It might even be Azure.com/feedback, but I'll get the URL later. And there's a section there for the preview portal, and you as a user can go there and you can request, you know, you can give us feedback. It could either be a feature or just something you don't like, and then other users can go and vote on that. And we take a really good look, a really close look at those, especially the items that get top votes. So, you know, without giving away any specific dates or any specific features, you know, the things towards the top of that list are typically the things that we'll be looking at to improve.
Okay.
So that kind of sums up what we're focused on right now, is really getting this thing out of preview so that everybody can use it.
And then maybe my top ask, which I try to do every now and then, and I realize it just doesn't work, is I've tried to run the portal on my phone, and it's not gone anywhere. Are we doing anything in terms of making a more mobile-friendly experience?
We're doing something pretty cool, actually, that I can't really talk about, but there's some really cool...
That's super, all I need to know.
super computer science-y, technical, cool stuff we think makes the mobile experience happen. We don't really have a date by which we're going to say, you know, hey, by this date, it'll work great on mobile devices, but that's definitely something that we're working on.
Yeah, that kind of blows your mind if you think about it, right? That we're going to have utility computing in the cloud that I can, you know, I have the complete flexibility to deploy and spin up and spin down and do whatever I need to do. And oh, by the way, I can manage it on the beach.
Yeah, you sure can.
Let me tell you, my dream is Cortana. Can you stop my VM, please?
Oh man, we have different dreams.
Yeah, we gotta get you out a little bit more here.
That's right. This is what happens when you do a certification test, you know, the day before. That's all you're thinking about. But yeah, I mean, it'll be cool to put that on the phone and get some. I mean, I think in this day and age, obviously, you know, having mobile access to some of those services, to be able to do things on the go, you know, fix things when you're out of the office is going to be very important.
Yep.
Great. Adam, anything else, Adam, that you feel you may
well, I mean, us? So Adam, do you, is there something specific, I mean, as a PM, right, you guys typically have kind of your the things that you're, you know, you're intimately involved in, or something specific? Is there something kind of that you really have a passion about within the bigger portal, or some area that you were specifically proud of doing?
Sure. Well, one of the things that I've done over the past few years, I've done okay, probably not perfect, and I'm sure you'll see the imperfections. But a big part of my job is helping the other teams within Microsoft that want to build extensions, help onboard them, help them kind of design experiences that are consistent with the rest of the portal, help them, you know, reuse patterns where appropriate. And I've actually done that in both portals for the past couple of years. But that's something I'm pretty passionate about. I like, you know, helping teams get on board quickly and at high quality. So that's something that I spend a lot of time on and probably continue to do, as you noticed and pointed out earlier. You know, not all of the experiences have moved over yet into the new portal, so helping a bunch of those teams right now get up and running.
I'd say if you're working on that, you've got a decent bit of work going, because it took us almost a year and a half to finally get rid of the Silverlight portal, something thereabouts.
It took quite a long time. Actually, it took, I think, more than that, because we released the first preview of the current portal in the summer of 2012. And I don't think we got rid of the Silverlight portal until just a few months ago. So yeah, it might have been over 2 years. And imagine
that.
Right.
There was some feature in it that we were deprecating that just never moved in it. Finally,
yeah, I think it was the old cache service.
Maybe that's what it was.
The only feature. We had turned everything else off. So, you know, you can imagine now we have, and that was when, you know, when we did that transition from the Silverlight portal to the HTML5 portal, there were far fewer services in Azure to move over. So now we have way more. So it's a much bigger effort, and I imagine it will take it will take some time to get there.
Yeah. So you won't run out of work anytime soon, then?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Now, Adam, how much influence do some of the top dogs in the Azure organization have on the portal design? Do they weigh in a lot, or do they leave it up to you guys, like all the experts, the UI experts, to do all that stuff?
Well, I mean, it's UI, right? So everybody sort of has their opinion.
Their pet peeves
and the things they want to get done. Obviously, when the big boss, Mr. Scott Goo, has some feedback, that gets some attention. There are ample opportunities for everybody at the company to influence, and certainly every once in a while the top dogs do that.
Excellent. That's good to know. All right, Evan, I think that's been a very, very informative session there.
Yeah, no, this was great. Thanks, Adam.
You're welcome.
Very, very
it's a
much.
Pleasure.
Appreciate your all your advice and feedback on the portal, and hopefully we'll share those links that you have for our listeners. And if the listeners have any things they would like to see in the new portal, we'll share that link with them so they can make those suggestions as well.
Yeah, actually, I found that link while in the background here. It's feedback.azure.com, and I will give you the deep link into the management portal, and you can throw that up there as well.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Great. All right, Adam, thank you very much, Kane, and have a good evening.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, all right, Adam. Thanks, you guys. Adam. Bye.
Take care. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.